Hi, I'm Rick Van Nieuwenhuyzen. I'm President CEO of Contango Ore. I'm here in Zurich at the Gold Forum, Denver Gold Forum. It's a busy time. Our company is developing an asset in Alaska called Manh Choh in partnership with Kinross, and we are about ready to start production. So we're very excited to be here with all the other gold investors here in Zurich. Yeah, so it's a good week to be here. There are a lot of investors here and very excited about the gold market with the recent move up. We all wondered where, you know, was it 2,000, was it 2,100, was it 22? And I guess it's 23 is the lucky number. So I'm here to meet with Swiss investors. A lot of family office folks are here. And Swiss, you know, the Swiss have always traditionally loved gold. And I think they're loving gold this week more than they did last.
There's a bit of a buzz in the background. We can hear people milling around and so forth. I guess the mood is really positive with gold price where it is. What have you heard that kind of resonates in terms of the explanations why gold is suddenly started?
There's several keynote speakers here. I haven't been able to attend them all. I've had a full slate of meetings myself, so that is the main reason I'm here, is to meet investors. But I have heard some of the keynote speakers, a lot of talk about China investment in gold and why such an aggressive move now by China investing in gold. Clearly, it's a de-dollarization strategy. You know, it's not going to take place overnight, but I think there's a little bit of concern that things are moving, you know, too fast, too quickly, and so you know, today there's a little bit of a pullback in the gold price. It's funny, it's always when it hits the U.S. When the trading floor opens in the U.S., you know, it always gets knocked. In Asia, the price was up; in Europe, the price was down a little bit, but still up. And of course, it hits the U.S. market and it's down. So. Not that I'm assuming that there's any manipulation or anything.
No, heaven above. We've been talking this week about, you know, some of the incremental margins, because obviously we've seen price rip for the past 2 years. So the costs rip for the past 2 years, where margins have been squeezed. But with this kind of recent burst in the last 3 months, I guess producers will be making good money at last.
Yeah, and that, you know, that's certainly the case with anybody who's in production now. They just got $300 of margin, and I think, you know, we did see of course an inflationary period. We saw with our project, our capital went from 150 to 200 over a year and a half, 2 year time period. But you know, as I say, the margin we were assuming a $1,650 gold price when we did the feasibility study. And here we are today, and the gold price is over 23. Margins are going to improve, and I think that's going to bring a lot of investors back into the space, not just the Chinese, but they're definitely seem to be driving the gold price bus just for their wallet right now.
Right. Okay. Well, look, I'm sure there'll be lots of chat around the reasons why gold's doing what it's doing, and lots of different theories as well. Let's talk about you guys. It's the first time you've been on the show. Well, they did you on a panel last year, but the first time you've been on the show. Can you explain sort of how you've got to where you are with Kinross on one of your projects, and, you know, how did that come about?
Yeah, so, you know, we found a 1 million-ounce gold deposit, good grade, open pit, 8 grams per ton, and we decided not to go down the typical path of trying to build a mill and tailings facility and power plant and permit all that ourselves, when we knew that there was a perfectly good mill sitting at Fort Knox, underutilized. Of course, Kinross knew this as well. I mean, it's obviously their mill, but so we formed a 70-30 joint venture partnership with Kinross, and we kind of frog leaped the Valley of Death, as it's been referred to in the Lassonde curve, by shortening the timeline to permits, because we only permitted an open pit mine. It's located on top of a hill, so on a relative basis, very easy to permit because you're not impacting much water. So. We formed a partnership in September 2020. Fast forward, completed the feasibility study. The permitting took about a year for federal permits and about another 6 months for the state permits, mine operating permit. We started mining last summer, end of the summer, and started transporting and hauling ore up to the Fort Knox mill in November. Today we have about a little over 100,000-ton stockpile at Fort Knox. We're ramping up the truck haul fleet. We have about 32 trucks operating right now, and I think by the end of May we'll have about 60. And by July we should have 200,000 tons of nice orange oxide ore on the stockpile and ready to process in July. So our share of production on an annual basis will be about 65,000 ounces of gold and $1,100 cash costs. So now we've hedged a little bit of the gold. Banks make you do that to make sure they get their money back. So about 40% of our overall production is hedged. But so we'll end up with a blended gold price realization in around the $2,200 level if gold stays, you know, in this neighborhood.
Okay, so it's not too shabby. It's a lot, making a lot of cash. If I may just kind of roll back the conversation a little bit, because I'm always fascinated by business plans and how these partnerships benefit the minority partner. So 2020, Kinross come in. Was it sort of was an earnings situation where you carried? I mean, how did the economics work out back then?
So at the time we owned a 60% interest in the project, and at that time joint venture partner Royal Gold owned 40%. But the project was kind of high centered because Royal really wanted a royalty. Royal Gold wanted a royalty, get back to their basic business. Obviously, Kinross wanted the majority interest, and so I negotiated the 70-30, allowed Kinross to buy the 40% because we had a first right of refusal on it. And we sold half of our 60 to make up the 70. So, you know, if we had started with 100%, I probably would have fought hard for a 50-50. But we only started with 60. So
I hear you. Okay. And in terms of what those economics will look like going forward based on your target production levels, and obviously you've been ramping up. What's the outcome for you guys? Is it just a cash generative business for you, and you'll be looking at Lucky Shot next? I mean, how does the business grow, I guess, is what I'm saying?
Yeah, so, you know, we'll generate this year probably about $50 million of free cash flow. And then next year when we get a full run of, we'll do four batches. We do a batch every quarter. So this year we'll only get 2 to 3 batches done. But next year we'll have a full four batches. And in total we generate about 65,000 ounces of gold on average. And then, so a full year of running, we'll have about 70, at today's gold price, on the blended gold price realization, we'll have about $75 million of free cash flow. We have a second project that we own 100% of called Lucky Shot, high-grade underground mining situation. We're looking at developing, we got about 100,000 ounces developed already at about 15 grams per ton, so very, very good grade. We're looking to drill that out later this year, starting in the summertime, and then we'll be underground drilling all winter long. Give us about this year and next year to complete that drilling, and we'll outline about 500,000 ounces of, you know, good grade 12 to 15 gram per ton ore. Again, that can be transported to the Fort Knox mill for processing. So we've got to work out an arrangement with Kinross, but they've got a hungry mill, and we'll have good grade ore that we can both make money on processing it at that mill in Fort Knox. And we see the opportunity to sort of wash, rinse, and repeat this this plan. And I call it sort of a hybrid hybrid royalty model, because we're able to do this with less than a dozen people. And so if we can identify other projects, which we already have, and look at combining with a company that has ounces in the ground that are maybe, you know, they have to meet some criteria. They have to be close to infrastructure, road, rail, or water. They have to be good grade, and they have to be a good, solid, simple ore body. You know, nothing terribly complex. And obviously, that's a question you have to do some probing and some examination on. But that's how we're going to grow this company for the near term.
Okay, so it's a cookie cutter approach in many ways, and if the second one works out, you'll find more. You're kind of like, I guess, the exploration development arm of Kinross in a sense, in that way. Do you see other people doing the similar model, or do you think it's a bit groundbreaking?
What do they say about flattery is you know, copying is the highest form of flattery. So, but I think you have to have good quality minds to start with, and that's what we have at Manchot. So we're going to generate good cash flow, and we're going to be smart about how we invest that cash through exploration. And we've been good at picking projects. We've been in this business a long time. We've developed the Donlin project when I was at NovaGold, and we developed the Arctic and Boronic projects at Trilogy, and at Alexco we developed the Keno Hill mining district. So we've got a good nose for ore, and I think you got to be selective. They've got to meet the criteria of being close to infrastructure, good grade, and a simple ore body. And that's kind of what I call the KISS principle. Just keep it simple.
Keep it simple, stupid sometimes. Okay, so you got this money, and I guess what you're saying, the smartest thing that you can do with this money is more of the same. Where would you look to dividends? Would you look to share buybacks?
I mean, look, first thing we got to do is pay the bankers back. So that'll be the first order of business. And advancing our Lucky Shot project. I own 7% of the company. I like the idea of paying a dividend. But I also want to grow the company, so I don't want to cut ourselves short. But so first order of business, let's be smart about how we pay back the bankers and how we maybe renegotiate the debt servicing on that one as we become a producer, and looking at new opportunities. But again, we're not going to get overextended here.
Okay, and that. Looking back over the last 3 years where gold should have been on a rip, but for whatever reason, the markets decided differently, despite sort of economic decline across the globe. Have you learned any lessons that perhaps might change the way that you grow this company? Alaska's great, but are there other jurisdictions that you'd look to?
Yeah, I think right now we want to stick to our backyard, which it's a big backyard. It's Alaska, Yukon, BC. And that kind of gets back to, keeping it simple. Keeping it simple means knowing what the risks are. And we've operated in those jurisdictions, so we know what a simple mine looks like. And what I mean by a simple mine is from a permitting standpoint. Again, keeping in mind that we don't intend to build mills, tailings facilities, and power plants in remote locations. Close to infrastructure, good grade that's able to be transported to an existing facility. And that existing facility can be a milling operation with a tailings facility, or it could be, for example, a smelter that needs high silica flux feed that has maybe 10 grams of gold in it.
Right. And if I look at your share register and the makeup of that, do you think that will change as you become a producer? Will you be looking for more institutional money coming through? Would you expect more institutional coming through?
Sure, and that's obviously part of the reason why I'm here in Zurich. There's a lot of family office and institutional Swiss institutional investors here. So, yeah, I mean, we've been sort of a friends and family company for a while. We uplisted onto the NYC American. We're on the Russell 2000, so that's brought a lot of index type funds into the stock. I was actually just looking at our share register the other day, and there was a number of new index type companies like BlackRock and State Street and that. So we're definitely getting our name out there, and it takes time, it takes marketing, and that's again while we're here in Zurich, and we'll be doing a lot more of this as the year rolls on. And I look forward to a nice good social post in July when I'm holding a nice brick of gold.
Well, I hope so. I hope so too. But just on that, in terms of given the kind of cash generative state of your company, certainly in relation to the current market cap, you won't be looking to raise too much money. So your expectation is what institutional guys and family offices will be buying in the open market, or will you need to, if M&A opportunities come along, raise more money?
Yeah, certainly to do the things we've got on our plate right now, which are Manchot and Lucky Shot, we're in good shape for that. We're looking at new opportunities, and we see the right kind of opportunity for the right price. It might make sense to go out and talk to some institutional investors and really explain our model and why they should be investors. And we want to be opportunistic about taking on capital. Best time to raise capital is when you don't need it. So those are some of the things that'll help guide us as we advance and develop the company here.
Well, look, Rick, I know standing there with a phone in your hand must be exhausting, let alone the conference. So I'm going to let you get back and into those meetings because I know you've got one coming up shortly. Appreciate you making time to see us. Give us a shout when you get back home, okay?
No, that's great. And thanks for the interest. And we'll look forward to the next time we talk. Thank you.